Now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett, honored to have you join me again this week. I have asked Sandra Myers to pop back in the studio to record this week's program. Sandra, welcome back.
Thank you, Jerry. It's always great to be here.
Now, Sandra has picked a very entertaining and enlightening program for this week. It is entitled Eclipse Frenzy, The Solar Maximum, The Devil Comet, and More Signs in the Sky. And I reckon what spurned this was the Path of Totality that's coming our way in a couple weeks.
Yep. Less at the time of this recording, yeah. It's almost 2 weeks away.
Wow.
And the frenzy is just becoming overwhelming.
It is nuts. We've got schools that are closing. How long does this total darkness take us? I mean, it's something like 8 minutes of total darkness, and then you got a couple of hours before and after, something like that, right?
Right. It's over our area, and this is for the little county that my husband and I live in. It's 4 minutes and 28 seconds is the total eclipse part of it. And then the part where it starts, the moon starts getting in front of the sun, and then, you know, we have the totality, and then it eventually makes its exit, and the sun is shining again. That's about 2 hours and 40 minutes. And so, the frenzy is unreal.
It is nuts. They're having to truck in porta potties.
Yes, and this is not just for Texas. The eclipse starts in Mexico, crosses Del Rio at the border of Mexico and Texas, and then goes up across Texas, covers part of San Antonio, covers Dallas area, goes over Arkansas, and then shoots up, you know, through Ohio and all the way up to Maine, and then the very tip part of Canada. But one thing is with this path, it's hitting a real accessible area for people to go and see the eclipse. And so suddenly everybody wants to go see the eclipse.
Yeah, places in the hill country are expecting 500,000 people to show up.
Okay, our little county, the county where my husband and I live, it's a couple counties away from where the office is. Our little county has a population of about 50,000. There's a ranch there called Reveille Peak Ranch. That ranch alone, that one venue, is expected to have between 30,000 and 50,000 people just at one ranch. That doesn't count all of the other. We have a lot of ranchers that are opening up their lands to boondockers, which means that you're camping, you bring your own porta potty with you, or your 5 gallon bucket, or however it is you need to do that, or your camper so that you're self-contained within the camper, and then as you're leaving, you stop at the RV dump station somewhere on the road back home. But so you have all these ranchers that are opening up their lands. You have cities like Kerrville, which is south and west of us between here and Del Rio. The whole city is going to be one giant eclipse celebration. And I've been reading the same thing in Ohio, Arkansas, Maine, you know, especially the rural counties. They seem to be being more inundated. Well, they don't have the infrastructure to support all the people. In our little county, the people who the locals are told, please go grocery shopping and get your gas about a week before so that the suppliers have that week to come in and restock the grocery stores for the eclipse tourists, as well as the gas stations. Restaurants, we don't expect to be, most everybody in our area, because of course we're all under the path of totality, most people will be staying home, most of the locals. So now there are, there's a lot of things to think about with this, that's with the frenzy going on. You have cell towers that will be overwhelmed because our little county of 50,000 people do not have the cell tower bandwidth to support all of the people that will be using it. What this means, if you extrapolate it out, is that it also is going to affect emergency communications. Calling for the ambulance or the fire truck or what have you to get help, that may be very difficult. Very difficult. So another part of this that is happening is that the amateur radio hams are stepping up to help cover that gap. Because we don't, and I say we because I have recently, just in the last couple months, become a ham radio operator, though I'm still on my technical license. I'm working toward my general. So I am joining with the Amateur Radio Emergency Services to help provide coverage for if the communications are having problems, so that we can talk to each other. We can talk to each other by simplex, which is radio to radio, as well as using the regular ham radio communications on other meter bands in order to bypass the cell towers. If you have a hardwired phone, which not a whole lot of people do anymore, you're okay. If you, and this is some of what the neighborhoods have been preparing for, is they're asking who has hardwired phones, who has Starlink, Elon Musk's communication satellite system for their homes, because those will continue to work. But the regular thing that most everybody relies on for their cell service, that could be overwhelmed. And it's happened at some of the festivals that we've had in Austin, the Austin City Limits and the South by Southwest. Sometimes those venues get overwhelmed by the amount of people. Now, inside a city like that, they will a lot of times jockey and bring in extra antennas to increase that bandwidth. And I'm sure I don't understand all of that. There's probably more than just the antennas, but all of the equipment that goes with it. Anyway, so, but because in our little county of 50,000 and the whole wide swath of where this is going to be happening across the United States, your cell phone carriers cannot possibly cover and bring in extra antennas to cover all of these areas. So the more rural areas are probably going to, that's why the ham radio operators are stepping in to help provide communication. We'll be at police stations, fire departments, hospitals, and there's also people that have volunteered within their neighborhood and put the information out within their neighborhoods that they're available for communication if need be.
That's good. I understand the overwhelming of cell towers. When I'm sitting with 100,000 of my closest friends at DKR during a UT football game, I'm working, but the cell phones don't. Because all of the kids, all the students, they're all on their phone. They're not watching a football game. They're being present in an event. They're someplace special. So they're all texting and Facebooking and Instagramming and TikToking and whatever else they do. But if you need to make a phone call, there's no service. So I can imagine with 40,000, 50,000, doubling your small county with just – people showing up to camp for the weekend and get ready for the path of totality. What kind of craziness is going to befall on the locals?
Okay, now think about this too. What else happens at those football games? Traffic. Traffic is going to be, this is some of the people that are writing on this, they say expect it to be like Memorial Day on super steroids. They're expecting, you know, some people will leave right after the, you know, right after it clears, and some will leave the next day. A lot of them will clear out right after it happens because they will have just driven in for the day trip, so to speak. So all of that Monday is just going to be crazy.
Yeah. I've told Sandra I think we need to close so I don't have to drive in this traffic.
That's a possibility. Or, like I said, plan on being here for a little while.
Yeah. It could be an all-day sucker because it's going to be nuts.
And it is.
To me, I'm not one of those astronomer people. And let me say this straight away before we get into the nuts and bolts of our program today. If Sandra and I call it a planet or if we call it Earth, those are terms that we grew up using. It's not meant to degrade from those who support the flat Earth theory. It's just our linguistics are programmed into our mind, and we don't think about how you want us to say something. So if I say planet Earth, just take it for what it is. It's not meant to be a slap in the face. It's just the way we were taught. And I'm 60-some years old, and I'm an old dog, and new tricks are hard for me to do. So bear that in mind. Now, this isn't the first time we've had a total solar eclipse.
No. They come around fairly regularly. But to cross the United States in an accessible area such as this, there was one back in 2017. But the moon was not as close to the Earth then. So the path of totality was not as long, number one. It only kind of, it didn't cover as much of the United States as what we're getting now in areas that are as populated as what we're getting with this path. So, you know, it's going to be kind of neat. It will be kind of neat because there'll be things that you can't see. We have eclipses, but when you're under the path of totality, that does give you an opportunity to look up and see the sun's corona and how, you know, you've seen pictures and drawings and stuff of how the sun radiates. And even when you were a kid, you know, you drew the lines out from the sun to indicate the radiation and the brightness of it. Well, you'll be able to see some of this during the path of totality, and during the path of totality is supposed to be when it's safe to take your glasses off, but only during the path of totality. And you may also, there's another thing happening, I don't know whether to talk about it now or talk about it later. There's another event that will be happening about the same time that you may be able to see during the eclipse, during the totality part of it. And that's the old devil comet. And the reason why it's actually called the Pons-Brooks comet. And the reason why they call it the devil comet is because apparently it's got some volcano on it that exploded fairly recently. And I don't know what they mean by fairly recently.
Right.
But what it did is it created horns. So it looks like almost like an emoji devil, that kind of that shape. So they call it the devil comet. So you may even be able to see that during the totality. There's other planets that you'll be able to see while it's dark like that. Like I said, the Pons-Brooks comet, I think Venus and Saturn will also be viewable. It's Venus and Jupiter. Venus will be just down to the right of it. Some of you, because of where this is going, there may be a lot of our listeners that are actually under the path of totality that may see these things. It's interesting. It's fun to consider it because you have this dusk thing that will occur during the middle of the day, and they say that it confuses animals. And then, of course, it becomes daylight again. And so it kind of upsets a little bit of the order of things. But, you know, honestly, I don't know how much they really know about that. But that's kind of true for everything. We'll get into a little bit of that in the second half, because the Bible has a lot in there where it talks about the stars, the heavens, things that have happened in the heavens. But I kind of want to talk more about the eclipse right now. It's going to be fun for a lot of people, something that they may not ever get to experience again. They say there'll be another total eclipse, but it's going to be a small section, I think, in the northwest part of the U.S. That'll be in another, 20 years, I think it is. And then there's another one that will cross more of the United States, think perhaps a year after that. Texas won't see it again for, I thought they said, over 300 years.
I'll be gone.
I may be gone for the next one anyway.
Right. Well, even if it comes in 20 years and I'm still kicking, I'm not driving to Oregon or Idaho or Washington State, Montana, just to see a total eclipse.
Right. It's something, it's entertaining, I guess, in a way. But one of the things that it really does to me is magnifies God. I am just so completely awestruck when I consider the heavens and the earth. Just like the Bible says. And there's actually a fair amount of, I guess you might call it astronomy, in the Bible, even announcing Jesus' birth, the Star of Bethlehem. Mm-hmm. Now, they've been trying all these years to figure out what that was, but, you know, I trust that the Lord put it there for a purpose. It's phenomenal. But back to the eclipse part that's happening very, very soon. April the 8th is when it is, in the afternoon. The grocery stores and the gas stations, they're going to run out. I'll be in one little town at the fire and police station. And we've been told that because traffic is expected to be so bad, bring enough supplies to take care of yourself for at least 24 hours in case you can't get home.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you might make it 48, but probably 24 will be all right. It's just people are losing their... it's an event, but you have to ask yourself, or I have to ask myself, is it's an event, but are you worshiping the creation or worshiping the Creator? Does it magnify the Lord in your spirit when you observe these things? And I'm not saying that some big biblical event is going to happen during or around this time. But God is, this is mathematics. This is like quantum mathematics and physics. Yes, it's over my head to even contemplate these things. I have such a wide variety of stuff that I listen to. I listen to podcasts and university lectures and stuff, and I will tune in a lecture on quantum physics. 95% of it, probably, maybe only 90% of it, is over my head. But when they start talking about the physics of the way space moves, time moves, time changes, when you have a certain arc, yes, I'm speechless. I can't not even express. But that's one of the things that helps me understand the magnificence and the marvel of God, his being the great mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
He set all these things in the sky. We have comets that come around every X number of years. The, you know, Halley's Comet being one that comes around however many years that is, and other comets that come around and meteor showers that come around every year at a certain time. How did he do that?
It makes you wonder. I mean, you have to be in awe.
Absolutely.
His magnificence.
Absolutely. But this little eclipse, it'll be fun in some ways, but I respect all the people that are just going to stay home and say, yeah, I'm going to go out to my yard and I might take a look for a minute or two, but otherwise I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
People don't want to get out and have to go to the grocery store because they know that the traffic is just going to be insane. And because it's on a Monday, this has become Reveille Peak Ranch that I mentioned earlier. They will start accepting campers on Wednesday before, and they're supposed to stay. The campers are supposed to stay until Tuesday. But, I mean, they can't hold them hostage, obviously. Now, they have this planned out. I think they have the appropriate porta-potties and everything for this.
The thing that gets me is somebody has to clean up the mess because we know how filthy people are, how disrespectful people are to other people's property. And I would hate, well, it's probably, as Jerry Nadler said, it's probably a good thing we have 40 million illegal aliens in this country because somebody's going to have to clean up the mess. I mean, I know that's a racist statement, and I'm poking fun at what Jerry Nadler had to say about illegal immigrants, but the rancher that is opening up his pasture, I wonder how in-depth his thinking was. I hope he's getting paid a lot of money.
They are. They're getting paid like $200 a night. You do a search online at hotels.com. Look and see what's available under the path of totality.
There's nothing in this Austin area.
No. Now, some people are renting out their houses. Those are going from a couple thousand to $8,000 or $9,000 for 4 days. So I guess it's an opportunity for them to make some extra money. Now, the people that are on Main Street in Little Marble Falls that my husband and I kind of live close to, the retail shops, this will be a boon to their business.
Mm-hmm.
It's fabulous. Some of the businesses that are not ordinarily open on Monday, they will be open. Or if they're closed on Sunday, and some of our businesses in Little Marble Falls are closed on Sunday, they will be open because this is a great opportunity for them to get in the black as far as their finances go for the year.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's good in that respect for them. I bet they get there early.
I bet they have a go bag and a cot in the very back so they can stay there and not have to worry about fighting all the traffic to go home.
Yep. Now, the other thing that has prompted discussion amongst the emergency services, too, is it's been dry here in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
What about, I know Burnett County has put a burn ban in place this event because they don't want outdoor campfires and bonfires and stuff like that. Now, I don't remember what year it was that we had the fires in Bastrop and here in Spicewood that destroyed a lot of acreage and shut down the roads and destroyed some homes and everything. So that's still recent enough where people remember that well. And so they're fearful of wildfires starting. And with all of the people in place, it's going to be hard for them to get out of the way of something like that, should that happen. And I pray it doesn't. And y'all keep everybody in prayer for this so that the people who are coming can enjoy it safely.
Yes, please. That's one of my fears. I did think about opening the gate and allowing 8 or 9 campers to come hang out at the Lazy Bee and charge them, but I don't want the headache, and I sure don't need a fire. We had one a couple years ago that was a mile from our house, And we've got horses and horse trailers all loaded up and ready to go. All the boxes of ammunition that we've got loaded up. I mean, it was a scary time, and this is going to be magnified because we have been so dry for so long. With all of these outsiders coming, they don't care, especially if they're indulging in adult beverages.
Right.
Then the idiocy comes out, and there's no controlling them.
Yep, so, that's for sure. So it's a little concerning in that respect, too.
Hopefully everything goes off without a hitch and everything is fine. Now, we're coming up on the break, so we may have to carry this over on the other side. But in the title, you mentioned solar maximum. What is a solar maximum?
Well, you remember I was talking about the corona around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is when during solar maximum, which is what we're in, it means that the sun is putting off ejections of the volcanic fluid and gases and stuff, and it creates CMEs, which are coronal mass ejections. And so the solar maximum, we are in an active period right now where there's a lot of activity in those CMEs coming in from the sun. Some of them get directed toward Earth. You've had some communications issues. They've been a little light so far, but there's been a little bit of communications issued. I think there was one around England earlier this year with one of the CMEs reaching it. A lot has to do with the time of day that it hits Earth, and there's so many factors, and I'm still... Actually, this stuff really fascinates me. During the solar maximum, too, it's a great time for ham radio operators to be able to talk to people around the world because it has an effect on the ionosphere and the magnetosphere where it helps propagate in our shortwave signal is probably better right now because of the way it bounces off the atmosphere. It's wave radio, and it just kind of bounces off the atmosphere in certain length waves. So when you have a solar maximum, it's a great time to get into ham radio so that you can talk to people from all over the world. My daddy was a ham radio operator, and that's kind of what picked my interest in it too. He used to get QSL cards, postcards from all over the world, from people that he talked to. And it's just kind of neat to make that connection. And you don't usually say a whole lot. You're making a connection, exchanging pleasantries and your call sign and that kind of information. And, you know, you go on to somebody else and try and make another connection. You might talk to Peru or England or Siberia. One gentleman just the other day said he was getting a signal in from Siberia, but he couldn't seem to reach him back. So it's because of the atmosphere, the ionosphere, and I'm still learning so very much of this stuff. I only have my technician's license, so much of this stuff is new in many respects. I remember a lot of the terminology because of my dad, but I'm still learning.
Wow.
They call it a license to learn.
Well, if you quit learning, you pretty much just waste away anyway. So that's awesome. Well, we're going to have to take a brief pause. We've come to the end of our first half. My guest today is Sandra Myers. We're talking eclipse frenzy, the solar maximum, the devil comet, and more signs in the sky. We've got a whole lot more to get to on the other side. Stay with us, won't you? You're listening to Power of Prophecy. We'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. I want to tell you about an outstanding documentary that Tex Mars did entitled Planet X, Dark Red Star on a Collision Course with Earth.
Planet X is the first and only video to fully explain the mysteries of Genesis 6 and Revelation 9. The Bible prophesies that a staggering army of 200 million demons will be released from the bottomless pit in the last days, having a king, or dark angel, over them named Abaddon. These fiery serpentine demons will torment mankind and massacre multitudes by way of fire, smoke, and brimstone issued out of their mouths. In fact, occult teachings in Freemasonry and other secret societies proclaim the coming of a mysterious Planet X, codenamed Sirius, the Dog Star. The Illuminati say that when it comes, this star will bring both catastrophe and salvation to Earth, ending in an alien invasion by extraterrestrials who shall reign as gods over all mankind. This is a 90-minute DVD documentary by Tex Mars. We're only asking $25. Please add $6 shipping and handling. That'll make your total $31 for Planet X. You can order your copy by phoning us toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-800-234-9673. Again, that's 1-800-234-9673. If you care to phone us on our regular line, that number is 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. Now, if you don't get us, please leave a message with your name and your phone number, and we will call you back as soon as we possibly can. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. You can use those charge cards at our secure shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com. If you want a fax in an order, our fax number is 512-263-9793. Just put down your name, your address, your charge card information, and a little note that says, I want Planet X. And we'll get it processed and get it coming to you just like we do if you order online at our secure shopping cart. Now, if you want to send in a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy. And you can mail it to us here at 4819 R.O. Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas, and our zip code is 78669. $31 postpaid for Planet X, an outstanding documentary. If you don't have a copy, I urge you to get yours today.
Okay, and now let's return to our regular program. My guest today is Sandra Meyer. Sandra, welcome back.
Thank you, Jerry.
Now, we were talking solar maximum before the break, and there are other, what do you call them, emissions, I guess?
Right. Well, we were talking a little bit about coronal mass ejections and solar flares, and they kind of they come off of each other. And one event that has always kind of piqued my interest is the Carrington event. And I asked you about this, and you said you hadn't heard about this, and I'm surprised a lot of people haven't heard about this. When I bring this up, people are just kind of dumbfounded.
Mm-hmm.
This happened in 1859.
Oh, I wasn't around then. I'm old, but I'm not that old.
And I'm older than you, but I'm not that old
yeah,
either.
Yeah, neither one of us are.
Of course, I'm not that much older than you. Anyway, so September of 1859, there was a solar cycle. They call it solar cycle 10. They number them in cycles. Anyway, and it was creating strong auroral displays, you know, like the Aurora Borealis thing, and sometimes these move south when we're hearing about these CMEs coming this way. A lot of times the Borealis effect or northern lights come farther south and more people can see them. I don't think they've made it to Texas very often, but I haven't seen any anyway. So what happened, there was a geomagnetic storm that put off the CME, and the timing was just perfect for these things to happen that created the Carrington event. It sent off a coronal mass ejection, and it collided with the Earth's magnetosphere. Well, Dr. Carrington, or Richard Carrington, is the person for whom it was named. He was observing the skies, and he notated this. And while this was happening, it affected the telegraph stations. That was our modern communication, our high tech of the day. In 1859, we had telegraph stations. Well, the geomagnetic storm really affected the stations, and it disrupted the power grid and things like that. So when this happened, it sent sparks through the cones of the telegraph. I don't know. I guess they might be receivers. And the paddles, there were some fires from it. It blew out circuits. It created fires. But the charge of it was so great that even when the station operators shut down their power, disconnected their receiving equipment from the power source, they still had power to operate. There was one little event that happened that the current from the electromagnetic field, it affected all of the telegraph systems all over Europe and North America. They failed. The pylons, the telegraph pylons, threw sparks. One little conversation between Boston and Portland was, please cut off your battery, your power source, entirely for 15 minutes. And the Portland operator said, we'll do so. It is now disconnected. Boston said, mine is disconnected, and we are working with the auroral current. How do you receive my writing? Portland said, better than with our batteries on. Current comes and goes gradually. Boston says, my current is very strong at times, and we can work better without the batteries, as the aurora seems to neutralize and augment our batteries alternately, making current too strong at times for our relay magnets. Suppose we work without the batteries while we're affected by this trouble.
Wow.
So that is how much power it put into the telegraph system, having one of those CMEs come and hit Earth. Now, fast forward to today. What's it going to do today? And I'm not saying that one is imminent, but when you have a solar maximum like this, and the Carrington event happened in the earlier part of the cycle of the maximum, and it's suggested that we may be winding down, but I'm not sure. I think it's just kind of like a window of opportunity and all the things falling into a place where we could go through something like that now. Everything. We have cars now that run on electricity. We have solar panels that'll probably be fried. What's it going to do to your cell phone service? What's it going to do to the satellites in the sky, both the communication satellites as well as the defense satellites and the astronauts and your house power? We used to have, I'm going to say, and honestly, I'm guessing, but I'm going to say in 1859, things were made better. So the wire was probably heavier than what we have now. Everything has become solid state. The wires are so tiny and fragile that it wouldn't probably take a whole lot of a CME to knock some of these out. We've had some events during this cycle that have knocked out some communications or interrupted communications, but it hasn't been apparently as strong as the Carrington event. There's been a few other events since then. I think Canada, I want to say it was Toronto, but I could be wrong. That area experienced some communications issues and electricity issues. I think they had power outages too. So we've seen other examples of it. It wasn't a one-time thing. And so because the sun does work in cycles, you know, it's something that could happen again. If all the things align just in a certain way. And to me, this is kind of the way God does things too. You know, we were talking about him being the great mathematician. He allowed that to happen, the Carrington event. It should set an example for us not to be so reliant on all of these things. I mean, our cars, your car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I have both read the end of days type stories where there's either like some nuclear explosion that knocks out power or there's an EMP mm-hmm. from the nuclear explosion.
Yep.
And a CME, the right CME, such as a Carrington event, another Carrington type event, could potentially do something like that. Mm-hmm. Knock most of your cars out because they've got all these computers in them.
In one of the books I read, the EMP, the electromagnetic pulse, was detonated, so it fried all communication satellites. It killed all the cars except those from the 60s and 50s that ran on points and condensers. They didn't have a computer module in the dash that regulated airflow and exhaust gas emissions and this, that, and the other. Today's cars, man, just would fry everything. And Sandra and I, before the program, we were kind of chuckling, talking about all these EVs that they've pushed on everybody. What kind of damage do you think, and I'm not talking just to the solid-state relays and the computers and things, but if they're plugged in and this Carrington event were to happen again, car batteries, especially EV car batteries, they're so large, they have to dig pits and fill them with water to get the fire out. How massive. I mean, you could have black rolling smoke from coast to coast
mm-hmm.
with all the EVs that are on the road these days. It could be not only catastrophic for pocketbooks, but your health with all of the noxious fumes that would come off of this. It would.
Yes.
And people, they get upset now when you have blackouts. What's going to happen if you lose power forever?
Right.
I mean,
well, for the long term anyway, in their lifetime. And the one that happened in Canada, I'm looking at my notes here, was actually in Quebec, and it was 1989. And that knocked out power across large sections of Quebec.
Mm.
So these type of events have happened besides just the one Carrington event. So I've contemplated buying a little VW Bug.
Right.
And then one of the things that you're supposed to do if you do that is you put your points and condenser in what they call a Faraday box or cage. But you have to know what you're doing in order to do that. And some people have talked about putting some other electronics in there, especially like a small handy talkie for ham radio or a smaller unit for ham radio, so that you can still communicate. But again, you're going to have to power it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to hope that your generator has also got some backup parts to it that are put away in a Faraday cage and properly sealed so that it doesn't get fried also. So it's all interesting. Are we scaring you?
I'm intrigued. And the possibilities of what could happen are endless. And in your description, you mentioned Dimorphos and Bennu. Obviously, I'm not up to snuff with all the different things floating around in space. It's never been something that piqued my interest, although this program is extremely intriguing. But what is Dimorphos and Bennu?
Well, they're both asteroids. We'll talk about Dimorphos. Dimorphos is an asteroid that has been kind of coming close towards Earth. And just not too terribly long ago, I want to say it was September of 2022, They sent a rocket off to it, and my dates could be wrong, I'm sorry, but it was very recent. They sent a rocket off to it. It's Dimorphos, and it has a little moonlet. Anyway, so what they did is they sent what they call a double asteroid redirection test. Okay, this is mankind in all of their hubris. They are going to go out there. They're trying to defend the Earth from potential approaching asteroids that may, and honestly, you know, when you think about how things move around, if you pay attention to the news at all, occasionally you will hear, well, this asteroid just, and there was one just a few months ago, that passed between the Earth and the Moon. Mm-hmm. In relative terms, that's squeaky close when you consider all of the cosmos. That is squeaky close. And they didn't see it until it was nearly already by us. So they're watching the skies for these things to see what could potentially impact Earth and destroy the Earth as we know it. And that is what this DART system was supposed to do, is it was a sample. It was a sample. I'm laughing at myself because Jerry told me I used my hands to talk and I never realized I did it. And apparently I do because my hands are all over the place. Anyway, so they shot this rocket at it. They hit the little moonlet. They created a crater on it. Now this is the part that gets me about man's hubris. How can they possibly fully comprehend the magnitude of what they've done? It's the moonlet to Dimorphos, but suppose they had just put it enough off trajectory that causes a cataclysmic event at some other time. Now, maybe the projection, or that is the path of it, is not really nearing Earth, and that's why they think they can do this. But what if it comes around again in another 500 years or 170 years or 2,000 years or whatever it is? You know, some of these comets, God has on a plane where they only come around every so often. Halley's Comet is one of those. Now, you had the Sky Watchers, if you remember correctly. And Tex told you about this too, and it happened in our lifetime, in our time here at the ministry, when the Hale-Bopp comet was coming. Mm-hmm. You had these occultists who were following the Hale-Bopp comet, and the idea for them was to commit suicide as the Hale-Bopp comet was nearing its closest portion to the Earth, and they felt that that would bring, I think they called it T-I, that would transport them up to the comet, and they would be captured on and gone on to a new life, I guess it is. And so 39 people committed suicide in anticipation of getting caught up by the comet. Well, that's the other part about watching for the skies. You have people that are worshiping the creation instead of the creator. To me, it just magnifies my creator because, like I said, when I start thinking about the quantum physics, and you don't even have to think about that. All you have to do is think about the basics of the patterns of comets and stuff. And when they come by, and the Pons Brooks is one of those that comes by periodically, the devil asteroid, there's just, it magnifies to me God's power because you can start in Genesis and you can finish in Revelation. It's all over the Bible, all of these things where it talks about him setting the powers or the stars in the sky, the heavens. You know, in Jeremiah it talks about the host of heaven can't be numbered. In Hebrews it talks about the multitude. In Job, there's the quote, you know, that is kind of like, can you bind the cluster of the Pleiades or loose the belt of Orion? The stars are here in the Bible. This is evidence of God's magnitude, his celestial mathematician, physics, all this stuff. It just, if that doesn't make, you know, my husband and I, we've driven through the mountains or we've gone down to the beaches, and it always awes us when we see these things that God has created. The mountains, when we're driving through the Rocky Mountains going to see his family in Colorado, it's very awe-inspiring. And so when I look at things like this, I don't think about it in terms, yes, Texas talked about the cultures that have worshipped, and he talked about it in that video, Planet X, also, about people looking for Nibiru or these other stars or comets that are coming by, but they're worshipping the creation rather than the creator. You have a lot of occult and primitive practices that did that. You know, you get stars in certain alignments and stuff, and they, and the sun god is one of the biggest ones that people try to justify that by worshiping the creation. With this, you know, we were talking back to the Carrington event really quickly, and we talked about the narrow misses of Earth, but God's got that in his hands too. There will be signs that we see. It's told us in Revelation. It's told us in Isaiah. It's told us in Ezekiel. There will be so many signs in heaven. When Jesus gave up the ghost, it was dark as the veil was rent in two. These are signs that happen in the skies and by God to, they should elevate your closeness to God and your awe of him and make you want to share this with your children. Because, you know, you can take your grandchildren out there and view the solar eclipse, but if they just only get caught up in seeing the moon come in front of the sun, then you kind of lost something there. You need to help them understand how so many things move through space. Here's another thing that's interesting too. Talk about the hubris of man. The hubris of man. Man thinks, and they are, they're so much smarter than I could ever hope to be, these physicists and astrophysicists and quantum physicists, and I'm drowning compared to what they know. But they still don't even know a fraction of what is out there. They keep trying to talk about how old the universe is, how big the universe is. That cracks me up when they try to put a size on the universe. It's like that tells me that they're only so stuck in their knowledge that they, and you can't comprehend the size of it. Even if you do the mathematics on it and you talk about quadrillions and stuff like that, it's still, they have no idea what they don't know. Because they are so learned among men. Just recently, as a matter of fact, there's an article about dark matter. And they've always had these ideas that dark matter is kind of like the absence of stuff. Well, there is, now the headline is like, well, maybe dark matter isn't what we really thought it was. The same thing is true with the medical community. They have explored humans down to the DNA. They've tried to do the DNA stranding and, you know, all the mock-ups for it and everything, and they're doing it. But they still keep finding out that what they thought they knew didn't turn out to be true at all. Alzheimer's is one of those things. They keep talking about the amyloid protein or tau protein tangles. And now they are rethinking that because, yeah, I'm speechless because there's just so much that they think they know, and they go forward fully 100% confident. And even if you gave them the benefit of the doubt on the COVID virus, They go so forward in full confidence, even, like I said, if you gave them the benefit of the doubt, and, you know, I'm saying that tongue in cheek, they go forth with so much confidence that they're going to fix everything. And, you know, maybe the lower peons think that that's what they're doing, because what you do is you only feed a certain amount of information to them. It's like some of these big secret projects. You bring in a person to work on this small part, and they never see the big full picture. Mm-hmm. That's only for the elite and top crust. So some of these people that are in the medical community or in astronomy, and we're not talking astrology, we're talking astronomy, but they see just only so, they're only given a small slice of the picture, so that they can't see the monster, almost like a golem, that they're building. But these people at the top, they get to see the bigger picture. And like I said, these astrophysicists, they think they know a lot, but they keep finding out new things all the time, and it's the same way with the medical community, and they keep finding out things new all the time. Oh, I thought it was this way. No, it's this way. And that's why I always urge caution when they have some new thing, whether it's the quote-unquote vaccine, especially when taken on the surface, believing if what they said was true, if you believed it, it still hadn't been on the market long enough. And that was one of the things that was my biggest clue not to do that. I know. I'm kind of getting off base here.
But I don't think you're off base in trying to explain the awe and the wonder that we don't know a smidge. Okay, let me give you this analogy. We know a grain of sand. God knows the Sahara Desert. Imagine that. One grain of sand out of all of that. That's what we know.
Mm-hmm.
That is immense, and that's awesome in its nature.
Absolutely.
To realize how far advanced God is to our little pea brain, that little grain of sand that we have.
Yes, and the Bible even talks about that. He knows all of the stars. He knows their names. That's in the Bible. If you can imagine that he already knows all, he's the one who placed them, just like the grains of sand.
That pretty much says everything you need to say. You know, and I love your favorite word, hubris, because we think we know so much, but we're not the sharpest tool in the shed. But man keeps thinking that he's godlike.
Mm-hmm.
I am godlike. And you mentioned the pagans and the occultists. You know, back in the day, I've read things where when there was a total lunar eclipse, that were the path of totality, that the Incans and the Mayans and all of these pagans thought that that was punishment from the sun god. Or it was a sign from the sun god that we're going to have a bountiful harvest. Things of this nature, because the hubris of man,
mm-hmm.
I know everything.
Right.
But I only know my little area.
Right.
And
it's been fun, Jerry.
It's always a blast. Sandra, I want to thank you for coming on and being a guest of Power of Prophecy. You have been listening to Power of Prophecy. My guest today has been Sandra Myers. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving us an hour of your time. We greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.